Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have served this valley for decades. Why? Because customer service means everything to them. They get you the best insurance that fits what you need, and they do so for the best price. And if there's a claim, they take care of it. And they cover the full gamut of insurance, commercial, personal, business, whatever it happens to be. All at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The NFL saying that Peyton Manning, there's no credible evidence to show that Peyton Manning used HGH or PEDs. Two notes. One, it was an Al Jazeera report, so I'm stunned by the finding. And number two, what credible evidence did they have to make sure Manning didn't versus the credible evidence they had on Brady? Whoops. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. The Pirates and the Phillies yesterday. Greg Brown takes over.
Gives the Pirates a 5-4 lead.
Two balls, one strike. Here's the pitch to Frazier. And a high drive to right field. Frazier goes deep.
As the game winner yesterday, and Adam Frazier's been a big plus since the Pirates brought him up. Hit for a good average, been a good player for them. That's our play-by-play call of the day. Well, it's Big Ten Media Day today, and James Franklin's turn at the podium in Chicago.
You know, I want to start by starting out by giving my condolences to both Nebraska, Michigan State, and the Fultz and Sadler families. Devastating to hear about that news. Been through that in my coaching career as well. And you know, I don't think it's something you ever are prepared for or can handle. But our support and condolences go out to them. You know, obviously right now at Penn State, just finishing up spring ball and summer workouts. Really, really proud of our players and our program for all of their successes off the field. You know, we take a lot of time in recognizing our players that are doing the right things academically, doing the right things in the community. And our players have really, really done unbelievably well in those areas. GPA-wise, graduation rates, all those things, just so proud. But right now, there's an excitement for the season. There's an excitement for the season, all the hard work and preparation that they've put in. There's an anticipation and there's a confidence right now. There's a confidence with our guys. I think probably similar feeling all over the country, but everything that we've been through and the challenges that we've been through over the last couple years, I feel great about our locker room right now. I feel great about our team and the commitment and the work ethic and the leadership that we've had. Obviously, our first year being back to the 85 scholarships, which is significant. I've spent the last couple months going back and changing all of our practice schedules. And everything that we're doing in terms of reps, the amount of time that we're out at practice, increasing the reps that we're having at practice because we had modified all those in the past, reducing those numbers, getting those numbers back up. So I think that's going to be really important for the development of our guys, development of our program as a whole. Competition and depth at every position, which we had not had. You know, every single position right now. I think when we got the job, we had 9 scholarship offensive linemen. We're up to 17 scholarship offensive linemen now. You know, our backup quarterback, whoever that ends up being, is not a true freshman who's redshirting. He's able to go into games and compete. So across the board, I think, you know, running back's a perfect example of the competition and depth that we starting to build. Everybody talks about Saquon Barkley, and people should be talking about him, but I think Mark Allen's a guy that we have a lot of confidence is well in. Andre Robinson is a guy redshirted we have a lot of confidence in, and then obviously Miles Sanders coming in. So I think that's just an example at the running back position of what we worked really hard to create that type of depth and competition throughout our program. So that's going to be extremely valuable. Senior leadership is going to be very, very important for us, like it is across the country. We're still a little out of whack, you know, with our numbers of juniors and seniors in our program. Spent a lot of time in the offseason studying two deeps of our opponents, and we still just don't have a large number of seniors in our program. I think, you know, on defense, if you talk about, you know, guys that are listed as starters right now, we have 4. And then on offense, guys that are listed as starters, you know, probably 2, and then 1 on special teams. So, you know, our numbers are still a little bit out of whack there, but those guys are doing a tremendous, tremendous job for us. Overall, I think this is an exciting and pivotal time for Penn State football. I think overall this is an exciting and pivotal time in college athletics right now. Obviously, there's a lot of change going on, but I think with change brings opportunity. Opportunities to make a difference in our game that's going to be safer and better for the players. In terms of not only on the field preparation and opportunities, but also off the field when it comes to educational opportunities, internships, things like that. So this is a pivotal and exciting time in our sport, you know, with the NCAA, with the Big Ten, and specifically Penn State. So couldn't be more excited to get going for the season. Appreciate everybody coming out and open it up to questions.
Please raise your hand. We'll send the microphone right over to you. Coach, our first question will be down here, left side of the room in front.
Rich Scarsella, Reading Eagle. James, will Nyheim Wortman-White be limited at all when preseason camp opens, and do you expect him to be playing the mic again?
Hi, Rich. How are you? Yeah, we do. Nyheim obviously got hurt in our first game of the season last year. Having him back is going to be significant for us from a leadership standpoint and from a production standpoint. Is he going to be limited in camp? Yeah, because it's going to be his first live action, obviously, since the opening game last year. So we'll work him back into it. You know, what you have to be careful of is when you have a significant injury like that, you got to make sure that you ease them back into the process, not only physically, but also mentally, having the confidence that he's able to play the way he wants to play. A big, physical, strong guy for us. Whether he's going to be playing the Mike or what we call the Will linebacker, our 2 box linebackers, that, you know, that will be to be determined. I think Jason Kabinda did some great things for us this year at that position. What's nice is, you know, Coach Pryor, our defensive coordinator, linebackers coach, he trains those guys to be interchangeable. So we'll just see how that goes. It'll be a battle for that position, but either one of them can move to the other box linebacker, which for us is the Will linebacker. So we'll see how that plays out. But his leadership and his experience and his playmaking is going to be invaluable to us.
If you have a question, please raise your hand.
Hey there, Coach. Zach Pearson with Reddit. So can you talk a little bit about your relationship with Coach Moorhead and what you expect the offense to do differently this year?
Yeah, you know, I got to know Coach Moorhead a couple years ago. I got a chance to watch him at a Nike football clinic in Pittsburgh and was very, very impressed with him. From that point, I kind of put him on my list, which I keep a constant list of coaches at every position that I want to be aware of. Started kind of tracking what he was doing, how he was doing it, the success that he had. He's also a guy that's from Pennsylvania originally, went to Pittsburgh Central Catholic, so that connection was there as well. And then just looking at the success that he was able to have the last few years as not only a head coach but offensive coordinator as well, and his numbers were impressive. It's one thing to have 1 year where your numbers are impressive. It's another to do it multiple years in a row. And then also with our players, I looked at kind of where we were as a program, what we needed to do to take advantage of the skill sets that we had, and I thought those things aligned. So, me and Joe started this process and started having some discussions about why it made sense for him and why it made sense for us. And I think the combination of what Joe's going to be able to bring to the table, as well as us now having experience and depth on the offensive line, those things are going to marry up well. What we have at the running back position, we went from being inexperienced at wide receiver to now being experienced. We got mobile quarterbacks on our roster that complement those things. So I think all of it's going to time up extremely well. I think Joe has got a nice scheme, but we also have the personnel that's going to make it effective as well. Joe's got a background like I do in the West Coast offense, so a lot of our passing schemes are similar. Running game as well with inside and outside zones and things like that. So it's not like we're running different plays. Everybody's running the same plays, but it's how he packages them together and the system overall. So I'm excited. I think it's a good match, and like a lot of things in life, it's also about the timing. He's coming to Penn State at the right time, getting back to the full 85 scholarships and having the depth and talent that we've already discussed.
We'll stay on the same side of the room for our next two.
Joe Giuliano, Philadelphia Inquirer. Hi, James. How you doing?
Good, buddy.
You mentioned a pivotal time for Penn State in terms of off-the-field community and all that, but on the field, obviously, 7 wins each of the last 2 years. I think your fans are looking for improvement. What are you thinking about how you can top those numbers this year?
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think there's very high expectations at Penn State, and there should be. I also would say that there's very few programs that would have been able to come through what we've come through with the type of success that we've had. 2 bowl games in a row, never had a losing season, through the challenges. So there's positives there to build on. There's no doubt about it. But I think progress is going to come in every area. The area that I'm probably as excited about anywhere is on special teams. Probably an area that I don't think people talk enough about. We're returning every single one of our snappers, kickers, and punters, and then we were able to go out and add a few more through recruiting, and I think we're going to have the type of competition at those positions, and also all the guys that we redshirted last year are now going to be able to have roles, complementary roles, besides just the specialists. So that's an area I think we're going to improve. Offensively, we're in probably the complete opposite situation where we are on defense right now. Offensively, we have a bunch of offensive linemen returning with experience. We have experience at the wide receiver position. We really have experience at every position on offense, which is what you want to do when you're breaking in a new quarterback, which is where we're at. On defense, feel really good about linebacker in the secondary. Feel really confident there, but obviously we lost 3 big-time defensive linemen to the NFL, and that's our challenge. Our challenge is going to be to develop guys at that position to come in and replace those guys that left that were very, very productive. When you lead the nation in sacks, not only as a defense, but also from an individual perspective, that's a lot of production to replace. So that's where our focus needs to be, is getting our defensive line up to speed as quickly as we possibly can so we can take advantage of the depth and talent that we have at linebacker and safety. Linebacker and defensive back, excuse me.
Coach, same side of the room for front row.
Hey, James. Jordan Rodriguez, Center Daily Times. Hi. I saw a report over the summer in which you referred to this year as year one and sort of having that mentality, obviously in reference to the full 85. Is that something that's been difficult to communicate with the administration as contracts are discussed and also conveying to the public that is getting impatient with 7-6 seasons?
No, I think that's more of are understanding kind of internally in the program. I think everybody, the administration, the former coaching staff, as well as our coaching staff, knew that our year one and year two were probably going to be the most challenging years of the sanctions. So we kind of went into that understanding that. I think my contract represented that as well from the beginning. So that was understood. So that was more us kind of talking about a philosophy. This is going to be a very important year for us, no doubt, to make progress, to show the direction that we're going. And our players understand that. Our coaches understand that. Our fans, administration. I think everybody's aligned and understands that and excited. Excited about what this year is going to bring. And our guys have prepared as such. So I think that's more just kind of an overall philosophy and something that we had talked about internally.
James, good afternoon.
Hi, Audrey.
Hi. I know one of the things you mentioned in the past is that every time something comes up Sandusky-related with negative recruiting, that you have to then kind of go and do some damage control, so to speak. Can you take me through that process when something happens like that, like this summer, when new things surfaced, what you have to then do on the recruiting trip?
Well, I think it's no different than anything else. You just have to be prepared, and you have to have a plan. And you know, it's kind of a unique situation because you're having conversations about things that you, your staff, your players had nothing to do with and happened over 40 years ago. But you just want to make sure that you have open lines of communication, that you're as transparent as you possibly can be, and you get on the phone and reach out to people and answer questions, and be open and be honest and be truthful. And I think like anything in life, people just want to understand, and they want to make sure that they understand what the future holds and the direction, and that's what we have to do. So whenever information comes out or anything comes up that we have to deal with, it's getting on the phone as quickly as you possibly can with the high school coaches, with the recruits, with their families, and just make sure that they're understanding it, and also providing resources of where they can, you know, get the answers that they're looking for, either from us or from other sources as well. So the Big Ten's been very, very supportive of that. The NCAA has been very, very supportive of that. Our administration's been very supportive of that. But yeah, there's been things that have been said and done that that cause concern, and that you need to be able to answer those questions. But once we've been able to do that, we've been really fortunate. We've been supportive. People have understood.
James Franklin today in Chicago. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck and maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks, just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
About Sam Ficken. He will go to camp with the Jacksonville Jaguars. All you want with this thing is a chance. You'll get a chance. And nobody deserves it more than he does. Just as a person, I think he's a heck of a kicker, mentally tough, but also this kind of guy you root for. So, Sam Ficken with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He'll get his shot there. Terrific. All right. Hopefully, you had a good long listen to what James Franklin had to say. I realize there's not a lot of in-depth questions there, but I thought the questions were important questions about the negative recruiting, about the... You know, where they are as a program going into the third year. I mean, I think he was allowed to express how he feels about things. A part of the situation that Penn State's been in is something other people haven't been, they haven't had to go through it. I mean, other people have not had to go through this. There's no pattern for us to sit there and take a long, hard look at. Well, how did X come out of it when they had to go back to 65 scholarships and then try to come back from that, and the time frame it took and so forth. There really is no... If this ever happens to anybody else, and that's a big if, I don't think the NCAA is going to do to anybody else what they did to Penn State. I mean, and I say that because there's been no desire on their part to do to anyone else what they did to SMU. Because they realized that what they did to SMU was so severe, they really knocked them for a loop and knocked them to the bottom for a long, long, long time. And here at Penn State, I don't think there is a desire on their part to do to anybody else what they did to Penn State. So there's nobody else to sit there and compare where, you know, where's the Penn State program compared to where this other program was that went through a similar thing. There isn't anybody else to look at. By the way, the panel that had to vote on the players of influence, JT Barrett and Raekwon McMillan from Ohio State, Saquon Barkley, Penn State, Jabril Peppers of Michigan, and Malik McDowell, the defensive tackle for Michigan State. In the West, quarterback C.J. Beathard and defensive back return man extraordinaire Desmond King. Northwestern junior running back Justin Jackson, linebacker Anthony Walker, and senior running back Corey Clement of Wisconsin. It was an esteemed panel and highly respected one that voted. Yes, I had a vote. Now you can question in the respected part.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. You name the insurance you need, they have it. And they'll find it for you at the right price and insurance that will completely cover you. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. It is the gift that just keeps on giving. It's the Rio Olympics. Now athletes are moving into their areas of residence. The water is brown. Carpet not right. Some places smell. There's garbage in the street. And other than that, it's as smooth a start to the Olympic Games as Debbie Wasserman Schultz has had with the Democratic Party. All right, so the gift that keeps on giving, the Rio Olympics. Is it true the suit offered me a ticket to Pocono?
He did. Just came in like 5 minutes ago and offered. He told me face value, which really shocked me. I thought he would cut you a little more of a break, especially if you'd be sitting next to the suit.
If I have to sit next to him, it's got to be free. All right, so, hey, really, let's get it straight. All right, let's bring in Paul Hagan from MLB.com. Hi, Paul. How are you today? Great to have you with us.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
You were at the Hall of Fame ceremony yesterday. I was touched by the incredible humility of Mike Piazza and especially by Ken Griffey Jr. What struck you about the entire day?
Well, I think the biggest thing was just the way that the fans responded to both of them. And, you know, the Mets fans came out in droves for Piazza. They announced a crowd of 50,000, which is one of the biggest crowds I've ever had up there for induction weekend. And I think that was the biggest thing. And as you mentioned, they both They both really struggled to get through their speeches, Griffey more than Piazza, but they both had periods where they had to stop and collect themselves, and so clearly they were both very emotional about their inductions.
There's great meaning to this, and it takes 75% of the vote to get in. Griffey only needed one ballot to do it. Piazza needed multiple ballots to get there. How do you view the Hall of Fame and the number of players that get in? Should more players in your mind be in, or is it at the right number?
I think it's the right number. I think it's really hard to get in, and I think it should be really hard to get in. So, no, I don't have a problem with it at all. I would much rather have a really good player, you know, have to wait an extra year or two or even five or six to get in than just open the doors and let everybody in. I think that's one of the things that makes the Baseball Hall of Fame special. And, you know, there is a backup. If a player doesn't get in on the Baseball Writers' ballot, they have the Veterans Committees. So there are ample opportunities, I think, for players to be considered. You can be on the Baseball Writers' ballot for up to 10 years, then you go to the Veterans Committee. I think the system works pretty well, and I wouldn't want to see it change too dramatically.
All right, let's get to what's going on now. Chapman's going to go from the Yankees to the Cubs. In fact, the Yankees are going to get back a guy they dealt in the Castro trade as part of it, but also one of the top prospects in the game. This is always an interesting week. You can trade without waivers. So what's your take on this week, and what do you know this week?
Well, I don't think anybody knows anything until it happens. I think, you know, things can change, can pivot in a very short period of time here. Until, you know, it gets to the point where they're just putting the final details together, and then it tends to leak out. But, you know, I think that that was a bold move by the Cubs, and I think it's interesting. You know, you look at Theo Epstein, and you look at how he's operated. When he came there, he kind of tore that team down to build it back up. So he traded the veterans to get the prospects that you know provided the foundation for what they're doing now. Now that they're in a position to win, now he's gone the other way. He's willing to trade the prospects to get the final piece or two they think they need to get over the top and win the World Series for the first time for the Cubs in over 100 years. So I think that's a very pragmatic approach by the Cubs, and I think, you know, I think every team is in a little different situation. Some teams are trying to rebuild. Some teams are kind of on the fence. Some teams want to win now because they think their window's closing. But I think the Cubs are certainly in a tremendously unique situation. You know, having gone so long without winning the World Series, it's become part of really almost part of their franchise identity, just like it was with the Red Sox when Theo Epstein was there. So I think the fact that the Theo is in a position to maybe win it all with the Cubs would just be a really an amazing story.
Yeah, no question about that. The Yankees were really caught in that, have been caught in the quandary. Are they buyers or sellers? The addition of the second wild card 4 years ago, how difficult do you think it's made? How difficult a decision is it now for teams to determine whether they are buyers or sellers because of the extra playoff team?
Well, I think it's really difficult. I mean, and every year is a little different. We'll see how this year plays out. But most years, you know, you get to even September 1st, and if you're a 500 team, you can usually make a case that you have a chance of making the wild card still. And, you know, if you get in the playoffs, who knows? You got a chance. So I do think it's made it more difficult, but I think it's important to remember in this case, the Yankees got a lot back for guys they didn't give up that much to get. So in that
right.
sense, they've already won regardless of what happens. Secondly, they still have two really good back-of-the-bullpen relievers, so it's not like they're pulling the plug on their season. And third of all, Chapman was a free agent at the end of the year, and apparently had rebuffed their offers to talk about an extension. So I think when you add all that together, it was a good deal for the Yankees to make, and I don't think you necessarily look at it as waving the white flag on this year either.
No, they don't. Between Betances and Miller, they already had guys that can easily fill that role.
Right.
All right, let's get to the Phillies. The Phillies are in an interesting spot. They have done a brilliant job of rebuilding the farm system in a short period of time. How do you look at this week? And I know a lot of people have been looking at Jeremy Hellickson and saying he might be the guy.
Well, I think that he is the guy in terms of, you know, who do the Phillies have that would have some value to a contending team? And, you know, they don't control his contract. He's a free agent at the end of the year. And that they could get something in return for. I think they are in a good position in the sense that they're not obligated necessarily to trade Jeremy Hellickson. But if they can get a good offer, and I got to think they will. He's got an ERA under 4, which isn't, you know, terrific necessarily, but he's pitched really well his last 5 or 6 times out. You know, the Marlins are a team that supposedly is interested. He pitched his best game of the season against them his last start. He's pitching against them again tonight. You look at a team like the Orioles that is desperate to add some starting pitching, you know, not necessarily number one type starting pitching, but just something to stabilize their rotation. So I think there are enough teams out there that have to, in my mind, have to have some interest in Jeremy Hellickson that the Phillies could make a good deal for him. And if I had to guess, I would think they would. But if they don't, Jeremy has expressed an interest in staying. So if they don't get an offer, it's not like, you know, they have a payroll consideration like they maybe may have had 10 years ago, that they, right. they had to move the money to save the money. That's really not in play here. So they can make a decision based just on, strictly on the baseball aspects of it. If they get what they consider as a fair return, they can trade him. And if they don't have to. And I think that's a perfect situation to be in.
Paul, is there anybody else on the current Philly roster that you wonder if they are going to be called into the manager's office by the end of the week or not?
Well, I mean, I think any of the veterans are subject to it. You know, you hear Carlos Ruiz's name mentioned, but honestly, I'm not sure what kind of value he has at this point in his career. I think the fact that Peter Borges has hit so well the last month or so, you know, would certainly make him a guy that teams looking for outfield help would have to be interested in, you know, because he's hitting well and he can run and he plays good defense, so he would have some value. And I think of Cody Ashe, who sort of seems to be the odd man out. You know, the Phillies are going to have a little backlog of outfielders here now. They got Aaron Althier, whose rehab assignment was moved up to AAA today. So he should be coming back shortly. They got Nick Williams in Lehigh Valley, who is hitting well, and I think we all think we're going to see him at some point before the end of the year. So, you know, at some point you're going to have to make room for playing time for these guys. Cody is not hitting as well as he was for a while. He's slumped a little bit in the last couple weeks, but you know he's still got some upside, I think. And you know he's a converted third baseman, so he doesn't have to go to a team that's looking for an outfielder necessarily. He could go to somebody who's looking for a third baseman as well.
All right, that brings us to the next part. You talk about the young players. We've seen in the recent years Chris Bryant come up with the Cubs in May, Gregory Polanco, May, Bryce Harper, May, even Franco, May. How important is the clock to the Phillies as to when they bring certain players up, or is it all dependent on the new basic agreement that's going to be hammered out in December?
Well, I think teams are always going to keep an eye on the control they have over the player and when the player is eligible for arbitration. You know, what makes it tricky with arbitration is that it's based on a percentage. So the day that you can bring a guy up and not have to necessarily have him go to arbitration can vary a little from year to year. And as you might recall, there were several players, including Maykal Franco, who filed a grievance over the way they were their promotions were handled last year. So I think that's an issue, and I'm sure that that's something that'll come up in the collective bargaining process. And then, of course, there's always free agency. You know, you don't want to lose a player a year earlier than you have to, or you know, give them a whole lot of money for a whole lot of years. Keep them a year before you have to. So, you know, you'd like to think that it's all based on just when's the right time in terms of his development, but clearly there's a financial aspect to it, too.
So what does this mean to potential September call-ups in your mind?
Well, I think it kind of depends where the Phillies are. You know, you can bring up a whole bunch of players, and the Phillies probably have some guys they'd like to look at, but, you know, you are adding service time. So I don't – the Phillies are obviously under different management now, so we'll have to kind of see how they handle it. But I think in previous years the idea was if a guy's not going to play, then what's the point? You know, so – maybe there's a guy. Let's take Nick Williams, for example. Let's say maybe he doesn't come up before September 1st, and I don't know whether he will or not. But I think at that point they might say, maybe we should bring him up and play him for a month and see. But then that also depends on, well, do you have the playing time? Is Peter Borges still here? Is Cody Ashe still here? Are you going to sit those guys? What's Aaron Altherr doing? You know, so I think you have to just kind of see where it fits in. I would be surprised if the Phillies brought up guys just to bring them up and have them on the roster. I don't think they'll bring them up unless they think they can get them playing time and really, you know, get a good look at what they can do going into next season.
What's your thoughts on how Pete McCannon has handled this young roster?
I think Pete's been great. I think he's done a really, really good job relating to the young guys, really relating to all the guys. He was handed a really potentially ugly situation with the Ryan Howard situation. And I think he's handled it terrifically. He's handled it by being open and honest with Ryan and telling him what was on his mind. And, you know, a lot of times Ryan Howard didn't like what Pete McCannon had to tell him, but he didn't have to sit there and wonder what was going on either. And I think that's really important. Communication is such a big part of a manager's job in the modern era of baseball we're in today. And I think Pete has just done a brilliant job of doing that.
It's so great to have you on the show, Paul. Appreciate the time very, very much.
Okay, my pleasure.
Paul Hagan, MLB.com does a great job. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
Only one auto dealer selling cars at $101 under invoice. And offering you 0% financing for up to 66 months. It's Sunbury Motors Kia.
Wanna see you in a Kia.
SMC hit their initial limit for this deal, but they're extending this offer through the end of the month. All remaining 2016 Kias are still priced at $101 under invoice. That's all applicable factory incentives, but only to Kia buyers through the end of the month. But that's not all. There's also 0% financing available for up to 66 months. Have a trade? They'll pay you top dollar for that as well. Plus, you get Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty.
What are you going to do with all the money you're saving?
Now is the time to buy the number one brand for initial quality in J.D. Powers and Associates initial quality study. Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip in Hummel's Wharf.
Captain Tag Veteran. 0% APR financing to well-qualified customers from KMF. Restrictions apply. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. Details at retailer.com.
Oh, a big storm's a-brewing here in State College. Wind's really kicked up. It looks like it's going to be whatever's going to happen here is going to be quick. It's going to be quick here, so it's going to be no big deal. But I can just tell you it's brewing up, okay? I can hear it outside the Sunbury Motors studio howling and letting me know that you shut the door and you were very smart to do that because now you're prepared. All right. Great to have you with us today. We're closing the shop for the day. All we have was on today, Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia talked a lot about the Phillies and about the Eagles with their camp opening today. The veterans in force, by the way, will be there beginning on Thursday. The James Franklin press conference, we went to Chicago for that at Big Ten Media Day. By the way, tomorrow will be Jim Delaney, and we'll have that for you as well. And, you know, and carrying the commissioner will be about issues, TV contracts, and so forth. But you know what? In the end, it actually does affect you. That's why I carry that stuff. know, it affects you, the fan. Where can you find your games? What are the rules you're going to have to play by? There are just a lot of things that you need to, that are answers that maybe an issue that you say, oh, what do I need to know about that for? But then something comes up. Well, Jim Delaney is deeply involved in all of that. That's why we'll have that press conference for you tomorrow as well. Well, I mean, the TV deal, the big deal. You know, what's interesting is that we have a lot of wrestling fans in our area. A lot of wrestling fans in our area. And this TV deal, while not, I mean, look, they're not going to carry wrestling. Fox Sports 1 is not going to carry wrestling. Fox Sports isn't going to carry wrestling. And the only time ESPN will carry wrestling will be the national championship. But the effect the TV contract has a tremendous effect on wrestling. Because any sport that cannot sustain itself needs to be a part of something that is bigger than itself. And that is where the TV contracts come in. These TV contracts are football-centric and men's basketball-centric. And because of the enormous money you're getting now in football and in, you know, and again, football is a huge part of it, but men's basketball is a big part of it. One's huge, the other one's big. And because of the money that's brought in from the TV contracts for those two sports, it opens the door and allows you to have all the other sports. I know there is some sort of fantasy out there that, for example, let's take wrestling, that it's financially self-sustaining. No. No. But it sells out. No. But they can sell out Rec Hall. No. Now, is it doing better financially than it was? You have no doubt about that. But it's still not making money. It still needs to draw from other sources to get the money that they have. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not expected to make money. It's not. What's expected to make money is football, and what's expected to make money is men's basketball. Now that, you're expected to make some money. You're expected to make money. And that's why when you see these new TV contracts, what's great is it's great for football, it's great for men's basketball, but it's great for women's volleyball, wrestling, softball, baseball, whatever. It gives you money to be put into facilities, money to be put into programs. Because all the money that's coming in is not going into football, men's basketball. It's going across the board. That's why we'll carry the commissioner's press conference tomorrow, because the deal he has struck makes Penn State and the other 13 Big Ten schools financially solvent for the next 6 years.
Your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com. This is WKOK Sunbury.